Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Exchange Live. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to accomplished UK fund manager Chris McVeigh of Octopus Investments. So welcome, Chris.
Morning, Paul.
Well, it's fab to have you back on the show. We've had a ton of big macro news over the past couple of weeks, not least last Wednesday's tax baby tax budget. We've had Tuesday's Trump baby Trump presidential win. And then we had quarter point decreases in interest rates yesterday by the Federal Reserve and the Bank of England. But before we sort of like pull that together and get your view of the equity outlook for 2025, I don't suppose you could just quickly remind the audience what kind of stocks you like, what kind of investor you are.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Paul. Yes, it has been interesting times, to say the least. Look, we are UK. We're UK growth-focused investors. We run about 2 billion in total in UK quoted companies, predominantly at the smaller end, although I'm lead manager on a multi-cap income fund, which we can talk about. We have a lot of AIM exposure. But yeah, we're looking for growth companies we ultimately believe can double over a 3 to 5 year time horizon. Pretty easy, Paul.
Yeah, good. Okay, we've had actually, if anybody wants to ask Chris any questions, please put them in the chat bot and I'll read them out. We had one overnight, actually, Chris, from Darton Trading. And he was asking about what your initial thoughts are of the budget with withdrawing or halving AIM inheritance tax relief, on our AIM stocks, and also the business relief, how that potentially impacts IHT funds going forward in terms of raising new capital and providing vital capital into sort of like fledgling companies.
I think I'd take a more positive spin on it than you, Paul. What this budget did was remove uncertainty. Now, if you look at what's happened to AIM over the last couple of years, there's been this niggle that at some point business relief might be removed in its entirety. What the budget did was actually provide clarity and certainty to businesses listed on AIM, and it recognized BR as a cornerstone incentive worth supporting, worth retaining. Now, yes, it has changed, and the tax structure has changed, but there is still tax relief for investing on AIM for BR qualifying companies. So, you know, we've had all this. If you look at what's happened to small mid caps, but on AIM particularly, with the combination of the cyclical downturn in smaller companies, inflation, interest rates, and you know, and the speculation around business relief has left many share prices at levels that totally fail to reflect fair value. So what I think this has done is said to, you know, to planners, advisors, your clients, our clients, BR is here to stay. BR has been changed, but you know, it's removed that uncertainty. So we think it's a positive, actually. We're delighted that they've at last provided some clarity. So I think that's really helpful from our perspective. And you know, you as a planner can now say, well, to manage your clients' assets as they look towards inheritance and look towards the end of life, there are various things you can use, and BR is one of those, and it's not being removed in the short term, which there always was that risk. You look what's happened to AIM since the election was announced back in, I think it's the 22nd of May. From the 22nd of May until just before the budget, AIM had underperformed UK small caps by 15%.
Wow.
Massive. And that was because of this speculation. Now, that is gone. So yes, it's different, but there's no cliff edge. Nothing is changing until April 26th. That's still, 18 months away. And it gives clients time to plan things. And going forward, we firmly believe that AIM and AIMBR has a place, and advisors will view that. And where valuations are right now, what you get with AIM is you get reduced inheritance tax liabilities going forward. And you also get the potential for some material capital performance from these current levels, which in many cases are it's once in a lifetime from a valuation perspective across much of AIM right now.
That's a really interesting comment, actually, because essentially what you're doing is stepping back and looking at the big picture, because people who have invested thinking that they've got that 2-year rule on AIM, a bit disgruntled that they've lost half their own. But actually, if you step back, it still is positive. There's a positive benefit from it. So,
what could have been the worst case was they removed it. Second worst case was they put it under review. Neither of those have happened. That we now know what it is, we know when it is, we know what it will be in the future, and it's been endorsed and recognized by government as a key cornerstone incentive that they view as worth supporting for growth companies. I think that's great. So I think the narrative should be about the positives here. It should be about the BR has got a reason to exist for AIM companies. And we're certainly on the front foot there was a webinar yesterday to our AIM clients, and our chief exec was on. And we are of the view that AIM is completely undervalued here, and we're putting our own capital to work as a business to buy some positions in these companies that are vastly oversold. So, we think it's positive. We think it's clarity, which is what we needed.
Good. Well, I don't know about the rest of the audience, but you've made my day there, Chris. Now, just on that same coin, what's your sort of your outlook for 2025 in small caps? I could probably guess after what you've just said.
I think I'm bullish. Look, what do we have? UK, what's been holding UK back? Politics, interest rates, inflation, economic growth, and then particularly within the AIM end of the market, the BR thing. If you look at what's happened now, politics, stable going forward. We know what we have. We know the landscape we're in. Inflation has peaked. We're now in the down cycle. Yes, it might be a little less quick to cut than perhaps pre the budget, but we're still cutting rates. We had the rate cut yesterday, helpful for growth equities, helpful for risk assets. Growth in UK, it's not stellar, but it's certainly not the state man of Europe. 1.5% GDP growth next couple of years is pretty sensible. BR out the way. And valuations, if you look at the UK market right now, look at smaller end of the market, because that's obviously what we're here to talk about predominantly today and what gets us excited. The Deutsche Numis Smaller Companies Index, compound annual earnings growth the next 2 years of 20%. AIM Index, compound annual earnings growth of 20%. NASDAQ, same, 20%. NASDAQ's on 24 times. The UK markets are on between 10 and 11. 12 times. We're on half the multiple to global growth markets. And people say, well, NASDAQ's always outperformed UK. That's absolutely not the case. Look over a sensible time horizon back to the beginning of the century, to the millennium. And the returns that the Deutsche Numis Index has returned to clients, 500-odd%, is pretty comparable to NASDAQ. Obviously, we had a bounce in NASDAQ over the last couple of days, but the returns are very similar. And that's even with the the relatively modest performance UK has delivered over the last couple of years with all the issues I've just talked about there. So you'll get great returns in the UK over the long term. It's massively underowned. You know, most of the reasons to underown the UK have now turned to positives. If you're an asset allocator looking at your portfolio and you've been long the US over the last couple of years, well, congratulations, you've done really well. But do you want to buy NASDAQ in 25 times? Would you be buying the same growth in the UK for half that number? I think you should be allocating a little bit of capital back towards our market. And it doesn't take much. UK smaller company funds have seen outflows of 4 billion since the peak in 21. That's a market of 10 billion in UK. It's not, you know, that sounds a big number, 4 of 10. But look at AstraZeneca's market cap, 170 billion. So it doesn't take much asset allocation away. And then obviously you've got the Mag 7 in the US with much, much harm market caps than that. So it doesn't take much asset allocation away from other markets into UK to drive these prices quite materially from here. So yes, we are bullish, Paul, to summarize. We think there's a great opportunity here. It's once in a generation. And I think the returns from these levels could be material. If you look at what happened in the UK, I'll stop talking in a second, but the valuations of the Deutsche Numis Index on an EV/EBITDA basis have been down at these levels six times, whatever it is on EV/EBITDA right now. They've been down these levels three times since the beginning of the century. That was post-tech bubble, post-GFC, and then now. And then subsequent returns from these levels when markets recovered post-GFC, we had 350% of the subsequent 5 years from the levels they're at. So those are the quantums. You can see, you know, from where we are right now, valuations are at such subdued levels that if you look back over history, people that bought at these points have made substantial returns. So yes, we are, to summarize, quite bullish about the opportunity.
Yeah, no, I would agree on the fundamentals. If you're just looking at on a peg ratio between UK small caps and, say, mega cap tech, then I think mega cap tech are on about sort of nearly two times peg, whereas actually the UK small caps about 0.6 or 0.7. And I've never seen it as quite as extreme as that. And I think a lot of it is just simply passives. It's just dumb money following dumb money, basically, into these massive stocks. And, of course, there isn't trackers of the small cap index. But anyway, let's talk.
But at some point, the dumb money. At some point, these trackers start to underperform. It always happens.
Yes.
Agreed. And then people look to active again, and then they find the most interesting active opportunities at the smaller end.
Yeah, and I think the catalyst will be earnings upgrades. Actually, if the small caps can actually deliver next year that 20% growth, people will start to really wake up and say, "This is, you know, it's a bit of a showbiz story at the moment." Anyway,
if we don't rate it properly, Paul, other people will. I mean, you've seen, 60 bids for UK companies over the last year. Average premium is 50%. And that's cheap. I mean, we had Keywords, for instance, one that was bid for a 73% premium. But that was still lower than where the share price was 2 years ago. We felt that was massively the wrong price. Sadly, we were one of the only people that voted against it. But, you know, that's the quantum of pent-up value that's across much of the UK market right now. So we're really excited.
Good. Okay, well, let's move to some stocks. We've got a question coming in from Steve Walters asking about premium UK brick maker Michelmers. They owns about 5%, I think, of the UK market, competes against the likes of Wernerberger, Ipstock, Fortera. And I think it's trading at about just less than 11 times PE, strong balance sheet. Obviously, it had a bit of a soft first half of this year and expecting a second half similar. But given what the government is doing in pushing the we're going to build button in the budget for all the sort of like the houses, etc. Plus, we've got infrastructure and RMI should be coming back. What's your sort of view on Michelmers brick?
Yeah, no, it's the wrong price. It's a premium brick manufacturer, slightly higher price point than some of the names you mentioned there. It's like London stock bricks, etc. It's niche, but it gives it that potential to manage its pricing in a more sensible way, so it can protect itself more than the Ipstocks and the Forteras, who are more in the commodity type bricks. You know, it is a really well managed business. It's trading on 10 times trough earnings, but you know, we've had weak demand for bricks. I think it was, you know, the market's down over 20% for, you know, year on year from a build perspective. And yet, you know, these guys saw revenues down 14, 15, 16%, I think it was 16% from my head. So they're clearly taking share, clearly holding, you know, they're doing well in a challenged market. So we've got this business on 10 times earnings, trough earnings, ultimately. This should be low to mid-teens. So we've got here a potential upgrade on market recovery and a re-rating story. And right now you're getting paid, I think it's 5% dividend yield to hold it. So you're getting paid to wait. Say it's a quality business. This, yeah, we're very happy with this one. I think it's really well managed. I think Peter and Ryan do a great job. And, you know, despite weak demand, the business is still performing. So, yeah, it's not the most exciting thing to start off with, Paul, but
I love it. I love premium. I love premium bricks. They're fabulous. In fact, just disclose, I own shares. I've had it for about 10 years. So I love the company. But, just in terms of, there was a podcast done, I don't know if you ever heard it at all, by Investors Chronicle last week, and they picked out rumours that Forterra had actually approached the board, had discussed a potential takeover. I don't know whether that's news to you. It's been rejected, apparently, offline. This is all according to Investors Chronicle, so there's nothing reported.
I hadn't heard that, but I have heard others have had a look at it as well in the past. So it wouldn't surprise me.
Well,
you know.
All right. Okay. Well, it's a bit of a crown jewel. Okay. Now let's move to another one in the building product sector. We've got Almu Mask, which does sort of like drainage systems for construction for buildings and stuff. And they do envelope and other environmental products. They have really sort of bucked the trend of tougher commercial property markets and done, frankly, absolutely fabulous. They're probably the real star of the building product sector. And I know you own it. What's your sort of your latest view on Almu Mask?
Almu Mask, yeah, it is building products. It's water management. It's a niche business focused on water management and building products. And increasingly good green credentials, which is obviously key to the selling process. I mean, this business, we've had it for quite a while. It's always looked massively undervalued to us. It's always trading on a single digit multiple. But we always felt there's something in there that was interesting. And we used to meet them and you'd always come out slightly frustrated because there's always some bits of business going really well and something would be pulling back. And I think what's happened over the last year or so, the management team have done a great job. They've got to grips with some of the more challenged parts of the business. They've disposed of some bits which weren't delivering. And you know, they've had a great run. It's up 75% over the last year. They've had a good couple of updates despite challenging construction conditions, which I think is just testament to the products the group's developed and the sort of stable and sensible strategy that management are put in place. You know, they continue to expand through M&A. They've got sort of plans to expand the margins. They've taken the margins up from, I think, high single digits in beginning of the decade, so 8-9% in 2019. I think it's 14% at last count, and they've guided to between 15-20%. So you've got a sensible top line story, operating margin expansion, potential for market to recover, which will drive more demand. And the ultimate underpin is, I think this will probably be acquired by somebody bigger at some point in future because of the product set. So, you know, trading on 10 times PE, 6 times EV, but 4% yield. So again, you're getting a nice dividend from it and you've got all that potential recovery to come through in due course. So yes, it's done well, but I think there's a lot more value in this just now. So yeah, we're happy to run this one.
There must be an exceptional management team actually to be a show, you know, to do so well in tough conditions. What are they going to be like when the tide turns and hopefully next year when we start getting a lot of building?
Yeah, they have done a good job. I mean, you meet Paul and Simon, and they don't come over as the most dynamic pair, but they certainly know the business inside out, and you know they're clearly very detailed. They've done a very good job. So hats off to them. It's been great. So congratulations to them and the performance they've delivered so far. We're very pleased as holders.
Yeah. Now you seem to sort of pick good management team because there's another one just finalised. You always put a bow on the building products. We've got Brickability, and there's the new CEO there. Frank Hanna used to be the CEO of Michelmersh, and I think he moved over about 9 months ago. Clear, they're basically a distributor of bricks and building products, but sort of like and imported stuff, and they do a bit of solar, and I think they've just bought a cladding business actually as well, which will obviously be very busy going forward as that huge cladding problem needs to be sorted out over the next decade. What's your sort of the investment thesis on Brickability? Because it should be now well placed given the macro is definitely turning. It is a cyclical business like building products tends to be, but the tide should be now be coming in.
Yeah, look, on management, Frank Hannah, we like Frank. We've known him for a long time at Michelmersh. I think he'll do a great job here. The business itself is obviously growing quite rapidly through consolidation, and I think he'll get to grips with some of those. I'm sure there are some bits of the business that perhaps we can drive more out of over the medium term. It's been a difficult market. We talked about housing starts down, 20-25%, and yet their revenues are down. I think March to about 13. So again, they're taking share despite the challenged markets. They're a brick distributor. They actually control, I think, about 15% of the brick market. So they sit between the brick manufacturers and the importers, manufacturers being Michelmersh and Fertera and everybody else you talked about. And at the other end of the spectrum, you've got the house builders and the merchants. And they sit in the middle and sort of manage inventory. You think they don't need to exist, but they do. They do a great job in managing inventory and helping with, you know, moving stock around for clients. So there's a reason for them to exist. It's a huge beneficiary from increased levels of house building. Clearly, it's trading on 6x, so it's on a suppressed earnings again, a really suppressed multiple. This should be trading on 10, 11, 12 times at least. So you've got potential to double your multiple and drive your earnings as the market recovers, and you're paying again a 5% yield to wait. So again, you know, this is really exciting from that midterm perspective. The government's made a lot of noise about building more homes. Let's wait and see if they can do anything like the targets they've set out. We're slightly skeptical, but there is certainly demand there, and these guys are in a really good place. So I think, you know, under Frank's, you know, steady hand, this thing should be a much, much larger business.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. And I think the market actually hasn't yet fully appreciated or got its head around the cladding opportunity, because essentially if you add all the brick manufacturers together and look at the brick market in the UK, including it, I think it's about 2 billion as a rough rule pounds each year. Yeah. I've seen estimates to remove all the cladding problem from buildings above 11 meters up until, you know, to high rises, anywhere between 12 to 24. But let's just use it's 12. That's six times. I know it's over a period, over a few years, but we're talking, it isn't just nudging it up. It's moving the dial. So somebody's got to be doing this. And I think the brick guys, when they do those cladding systems and brick slips and stuff, are probably the really well placed to do that. You know, Brickability and Michelmersh, I guess.
No, I agree. I mean, I don't think we need to even that. That's clearly a massive opportunity for them. But even excluding that, the business, the core business, the more boring business of brick distribution has got massive opportunity for this. So, yeah, I think it's massively undervalued here this time.
Yeah, good. Okay, yeah, no, I think building products is a good place for people to have a good look at next year. Okay, let's switch sectors. We've got another question coming from Steve Walters asking about Kitwave, which is a UK wholesaler or distributor of food impulse products, sort of, I don't know, ice creams, candy, and all kinds of products to convenience stores, but also increasingly to food services businesses, restaurants, and those type of outlets, etc. Across the UK. It's got a buy and build strategy. Just bought somebody, Creed, I think, a few months ago for about 60-70 million pounds. Seems to be pretty well placed as a good solid business going forward. Anyway, that's how are you seeing it, its prospects?
Yeah, I mean, I think it summarized that very well, Paul. It is an independent UK wholesaler, a mini Booker. I think you might want to classify it as. It's one of the very few IPOs, I think it was 2021, it came to market. It's one of the very few IPOs which A, still remains on the public markets, hasn't gone bust, and has delivered fantastic returns. So we've been involved in this since IPO. We also we did add to it at the last raise on the back of the deal. I was just one of my less glamorous site visits. Not that I go to many glamorous places, Paul, but less glamorous site visits was standing in a cold store at Kitwave's Depot in Coventry, I think it was, a couple of months ago, minus 20 degrees, discussing things with the chief exec, because obviously used to that environment, was happily chatting away. It was killing me. But look, a great business, well-placed, you know, growing organically really well and through acquisitions. It's got ambitions. It's well-managed. I think it's focused on its margins. Again, it's good value from a ratings perspective. Again, it's got a decent dividend yield of just about 4%. You know, it's a tough market. Let's face it. We've seen, you know, we've had a few public market stocks which have fallen over. So I'm not saying this is an easy market to make money in, but if it's well managed and you control your margins and focus on your returns, as these guys have today, extremely well, you can grow a really good business here, and they're doing that. So I think it's in great shape. It's what I really like. And I think it's got, you know, longevity. So it's, yeah, not most exciting again, but but a great business with potential, you know, compounding characteristics, and great shape.
Yeah, and I think these type of businesses have pretty resilient to inflation as well, aren't they? They've got good pass through, sort of like when you're selling to sort of like, you know, convenience stores or even, you know, to supplying supermarkets and this sort of stuff. The inflation actually is not, you know, you can pass it on.
And then on the deflation, I mean, they asked them about that. They say they've never seen Mars reduce the price of a Mars bar. You know, so
yes,
they're not going to see that. So. So yeah, I think they're in really good shape from that perspective.
Yeah, just
all about service. If you deliver the service to these convenience stores, you deliver on time in full. You know, as long as you're not making a mess of it, they stick with you. So
yeah,
you know, the risk of, and there's also operational, you know, the efficiencies they can drive out. And they've now, you know, currently they've got a couple of trucks maybe delivering to the same store each day. They're starting to consolidate that. That again helps. You know, more efficiency, more margin. It's all sensible stuff.
Yeah, no, that network density. We've got a follow-up comment from, or question from, Nigel Batty Seams. He's asking, this is an easy one for you, Chris. Do you think, given that Booker was acquired by Tesco, do you think that Kitwave will become an acquisition target ultimately?
Potentially. I mean, I don't Booker's a long time ago, and I don't know whether Tesco still have ambition to grow into that market anybody else. But I don't think they need. This isn't one I'm sitting here thinking at some point it'd be taken out. We talked about a couple of names earlier on, which might be at some point. This isn't obvious, but I think, you know, that's maybe an underpin. But I think that this business has got a long way to go before it gets to that sort of stage, and we're very happy to run it just now.
Yeah, and I think that just broader picture, isn't it? Anything on AIM at a ridiculously low valuation or as attractive, private equity will be looking and having a look. So just as a more general observation. Okay, let's switch sector. Let's go to financial services. And actually, this could be a real winner of the budget, because if you've got anybody who's sort of wealthy or ultra high wealthy or retiring or this sort of stuff, got pensions, need tax advice, regulatory environment sort of like, you know, tightening up, then there could be a bit of a boom time. And if you run your own business, you know, as a private company looking to reduce your IHT bill, maybe you want to sell it and that, or list it or whatever, I don't know. But anyway, it requires a lot of, let's move to financial services. Let's go to JTC, which is a big sort of investment services platform, largely for wealth managers and funds and corporates for their shareholder structures and stuff like that. It's done obviously really well for you. How are you seeing the business going forward?
This is a global business, trust and professional services, you know, increasingly building their presence in the US through consolidation there. You know, an ambitious management team, charismatic Nigel Aquens, who runs it, has done a fantastic job there. I mean, stock prices rolled back a bit of late. I think it's a really good entry point here myself. Mm-hmm. And you know, ultimately, there's not many of these types of businesses. They've got really good, high quality, recurring revenues, good visibility. Private equity love these sorts of things. We've seen it in the UK market and overseas, consolidation there. You know, I ultimately at that point, I think some point that might be the end for this from a public market perspective. But right now, you know, it's a great growth business. It's got ambitious targets, which it's set out in its latest strategy update. It will continue to grow. It's not cheap, some 20 times. The debt's maybe a little bit higher for some because of the fact it has been using its balance sheet to consolidate 2 times, but they will pay that down because it's highly cash generative. It's paying a 1.5% dividend yield. I think this business itself is a global platform that has got a long way to go. It expands its product set, expands its penetration into new markets through acquisitions. I think it's in great shape. So no, it's done really well for us, but you know, we're hugely excited by it.
Yeah. Okay, in the same sector and also in the sort of same context, we've got Fintel, which is sort of like an IFA type platform. Plus, it does sort of like helps investors to sort of like help their particular fund chooses and ratings and also selection, etc. It's on a buy and build as well. Again, I think it listed a few years back, but it's one of the few that actually has done really well. How are you seeing this one sort of like, you know, transitioning going forward?
Yeah, it's a much smaller business, 200 million market cap. But you know, it's looking in good shape. IFA intermediary services platform, providing all the things that an IFA would need. Which it's taken a while to build. They bought some great brands, De Facto, 360. They've obviously had Simply Biz themselves. That's the platform they developed. But they've now got this built product suite. It's not complete. It'll never be complete. There's still things they can develop and they will develop. But the product offering they now have, I think, is really going to start to crystallize the market opportunity for them. They service over, 400 industry partners, 3,000 intermediary firms. So they've got some really good presence already. But I think they can sell into more intermediary firms and upsell the products, you know. You might just take one of their services right now, but as I say, they've got this whole product suite they can offer you as an IFA. Why wouldn't you switch all your stuff and services to them? And I think that's the opportunity set, really. I think this is really going to start to accelerate earnings over the medium term, and that's not fully reflected in numbers. So I think this is an exciting business. It's taken a while to build that out. So the earnings profile has been relatively modest over the last couple of years, but I think we're at that now. Really interesting inflection point, and we could see this thing start to grow and develop really nicely.
Yeah, and I think the sectoral tailwinds, it's tighter regulation, more need for sort of, you know, wealth planning, etc., and personal DIY investing. I mean, it just plays to their strengths, doesn't it? The sector is not shrinking.
It's not shrinking, and it needs tech help, and it needs regulatory help, and it needs all these things that Fintel provide to them. So.
Yeah. And just another one in that sector, which doesn't really get much attention and should do, really, which is, again, brilliantly, is XPS Pensions. How are you seeing this one? I mean, pensions, again, they were changing the flipping rules and the tax policies of all pensions in the budget. I mean, they do it every single 12 months. It just seems to be just stoking the benefit for these companies. But how you see it?
Yeah, a pension consultant administration firm had a massive boost around the Trustonomics budget because it caused it caused so many issues across the pension industry at that point. Pension industry changes are good for these guys. They serve over 1,500 pension schemes. They got some really good high profile clients like BT, John Lewis, etc. So they've got. You know, they've got some really credible names on the roster there. It's a great business. I think the only negative from my perspective is that it's well owned now from an income fund, a multi-cap income fund in particular, which is what we run. It's quite well owned from that perspective. It pays a 3% dividend yield and it's been delivering great growth and great margins. I think margins are mid-20s. So, you know, it's lots of stuff to like about it. Rating-wise, 19 times. You know, it's not the cheapest. It certainly was a lot cheaper, but it's delivered. And I think there is scope for further upgrades. It continues to outperform. It continues to come to the market with updates which are ahead of market expectations. And it's got that it's starting to build a real fan base for itself. But again, this is a niche business, Paul. There's not many of these around. And I think the opportunity in the marketplace is still massive. And despite the rating being a little bit high in the short term, I think the opportunity more than offsets that. So we're very happy to continue to run and hold it. I think it's in great shape, great position. And you know, tax changes and pension changes, et cetera, play into the hands of these guys to they're required to continue to advise clients. So yeah, so in a good shape from an industry perspective, good shape from a market positioning perspective, and the opportunity is huge. So
I would say, you know, with a sort of potential sort of addressable market of about 40 or 50 million people in the UK who have got sort of like defined contribution pensions, then and they've just changed the laws by like 180 degrees, then I think there's going to be a lot of people who are scratching the lead and need a bit of support. So if their name is anything to go with what they do, then they should do pretty well. Yeah, okay, yeah. Let's move to the picks and shovels healthcare guys. Let's start with hVIVO, which does challenge trials in London, again done very well. Industry sort of like veteran who runs it, Mo, and he seems to have done a fabulous job. They basically help biotech companies test their new sort of like vaccines and trials and stuff like this. They inject people, volunteers who are healthy with potential sort of respiratory, could be any disease, and then see how they react and to the actual the treatment, etc. But it's one of the very few companies who do this really well and really in a regulated environment. How are you seeing it going forward?
Yeah, it's one we've held for a while. It's again a charismatic leader, Mo Khan. If you've met him, he's very excited about the opportunity here. Human challenge trials, yes, it's using healthy volunteers to help speed up potential drugs getting to market. It's lower cost, lower risk, quicker than using traditional methods. And it doesn't replace them, it just sits alongside the usual drug trial process. They are market leaders in this space. From a global perspective, it's not just biotechs, Paul. It is pharma as well. So Pfizer, yes, one of the bigger clients. So they're getting real credibility. It's just a matter of time here. More and more large pharma will feel more comfortable using human challenge trials as they realise the benefits of it and the fact that regulators are happy to use the results generated by it. And it, you know, as they help get these drugs to market more effectively, more quickly, and you know, the quicker you can get these, the better DCF returns, all that sort of stuff that these corporates will look at when they're analysing a potential drug to take to market. So human challenge trials, we think, have got a great future. The other leader in it globally, you said, it is one that gets the market excited. That was a capital markets day down at the new facility in Canary Wharf, and it shows a changing landscape of Canary Wharf. I think it was the old Lehman's building. They've taken a couple of floors in, and that's now their trial centre where they have got the trial beds for the patients as well as labs. And I think the opportunity for the business is not just within the human trials within the environment which we went to see, but they're now doing new field studies as well, which they're recruiting for currently. So we'll hear about that. They could actually, they think, leverage their patient recruitment and make that a revenue stream in due course. And they're also developing this specialist lab services business as well. So there's lots of different aspects to the group which haven't come through yet from a revenue and an earnings perspective that are on top of the potential for human challenge trials on their own. So, you know, it's had a good run, as you say, but there's a lot of interest in there. On the capital markets day, there are over 100 attendees, over 30 investors looking at this. So I think it's getting credibility. Mo's done a great job. You know, what's this video on 17 times right now for a business of this sort of potential and this opportunity? I think that's still too cheap. So one that, yeah, we're very happy to continue to run. And I think there's a massive opportunity here as well.
Yeah. And given you kicked the tires on Kitwave's cold store, and I think you were away at half term, I was just wondering whether you were sort of like testing out these sort of beds down at their new facility in hVIVO's down in London there during that week off there, Chris.
A tempting offer. I think my wife might object if I took half term to hide out in a very comfortable hospital bed rather than take my kids on holiday. No, sadly not. But it's
maybe Christmas does.
They do pay quite well, so it's something to consider if these must. But no, not yet.
Yeah, no, good. Okay, another one in that sector in healthcare, picks and shovels. We've got AI-powered sort of digital imaging, neurological sort of like expert, Ixico, which came onto sort of the agenda. I know it's one of your colleagues at Octopus, yeah. But in there probably the IHT fund. But Octopus now have got 18% of the company. They just did a fundraise, £4 million at 9.5p. Basically, they are the sort of the brains behind brain scans, helping biotech companies understand how their drugs impact patients and improve their lives in things like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and Huntington's disease. And it does seem that industry does seem to have reached a bit of a tipping point, because two drugs last year were released, from one from Eli Lilly and one from Biogen. And now that's sort of like, you know, act as a catalyst to really put a lot of programs from Biopharm. Anyway, how did your colleague sort of view Ixico when he effectively anchored the fundraise?
It's in the VCTs rather than the IHT. Okay. I've heard that, but which the VCTs within Octopus, say the AIM VCTs, they back early stage businesses, and you know, hopefully look to support them as they grow and scale. So yeah, it's a specialist medical imaging company you talked about, Paul. It's helping these large pharma develop drug candidates focused on, you know, Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and Huntington's, as you talked about. So you know, it's an interesting part of the market. I think what's got us most interested is really the new CEO. He's experienced, just been installed. You know, I think they're hopefully backing them to get this business through to profitability. Their £4 million placing in October, we think should be enough to get its profitability, and hopefully deliver substantial returns at the point as well. The shares have not had a great run, as you can see, but given what they've done and given the credible management team they now have in place, who sort of they plan to leverage Ixico's AI tech, the client list, the partnership list to sort of drive commercial progress here, we think they stand a good chance. So yeah, let's wait and see. It's not one I've met, so I can't profess to come at it with any significant knowledge, but my colleagues, yeah, they seem fairly excited by what this has ahead of it, and yeah, let's wait and see.
Yeah, no, I actually spoke to the new CEO, Bram Gordon, earlier in the week, and he mentioned, I think it was sort of 25 plus different sort of like molecules coming into trials next year for neurological diseases. So rather than having a sort of like a deficit beforehand, now it's really sort of like kicking on. So yeah, there's plenty to play for. Okay, let's move to sort of consumer sort of healthcare, a company that just listed actually, which is phenomenal given the amount of uncertainties we've been talking about. We've got Applied Nutrition, which I think does sort of like sort of powder and proteins for sort of bodybuilding. And frankly, I was looking at the numbers. I know there's no broker report out, but they've been knocking the ball out of the park. Anyway, how do you see this company going forward? Because it does seem to really be sort of catching a wave.
Yeah, it is that sort of product set you talked about, Paul. It's it's the creatines and all the other products which bodybuilders who aren't me, and I don't think they're you, Paul, either. Not target market, no. But they've done a great job, and this thing came to market on 14 and a bit times price to earnings on the forecasts that the brokers issued before the IPO was launched. That's 11 times EV, but that's for a business which has grown 40% over the last year. We think it's on track to deliver a similar number for this year, given the last couple of months. Yet the forecast in the market that we just talked about, those numbers, they're only forecasting 13% growth. So it feels like numbers are extremely prudent. This is a multi-billion pound market where they've got a really small market share, so significant scope to growth. They've got really good international platforms. It's not just in the UK they sell. One of the largest customers in the UK is Holland & Barrett. But they sell into the Middle East. They've got an increasing platform in the States. So they've got a good footprint to continue to leverage the brands and that they're developing and to push out. And it's all about product quality, price. They can be innovative in what they're developing as well. So it's not just taking other people's compounds and remixing them and repackaging them and making it higher quality from that perspective. It's also being slightly innovative in some of the products they're developing, which they tell me, you know, again, gives them that slight edge. So, you know, really interesting from that perspective. From a margin perspective, the margin's currently about 30%, which the management, yeah, which is amazing given what they're doing. But management are confident they can maintain this. They say they're laser focused on margins. They've obviously, there are some cost pressures with regard to some of the compounds that they use for their ingredients, but they manage that, and they manage that well. And they've even, they showed some examples during the presentation of high whey prices, which obviously is the key components. And even with that, they've still been able to maintain those good margins. So, but you know, they're laser focused on that. Cash dynamics look really exciting. 70% cash conversion. Well, obviously, therefore, underpin a dividend of some sort. And management that when you meet them, they impress. They're all over the detail. And you know, I think they'll continue to grow the business, continue to grow the sort of four core ranges that they currently have. They'll do some product infills as well. And coming in a multiple which looks attractive, I think it's hugely reassuring this got away. It shows the UK market is not dead. There are quality businesses. There are quality businesses that want to list in public markets. They see the benefits of listing in public markets. The fact they've got long-term supportive shareholders, patient capital. There's a reason for public markets to exist. And I think it's great that a company, despite all the noise and the pre-budget, you know, press speculation, they went for it and they got it away successfully. So it's trading at a small premium to its IPO price, but I think there'll be upgrades here, and I'm sure the shares will be significantly higher if we chat here in 6 months' time, Paul.
Yeah, I think they've got a backer, haven't they? Is it JD Sports as well? And given JD Sports have got a big US presence, you might find actually they replicate their success in the UK out in the States as well, because they've got a shed load of stores out there, JD Sports. I know it's more of a gym type product, but hey, they do, you know, sports and stuff.
Yeah, JD's sold down. They've still got a stake. Okay. They sold down quite a lot in the IPO. That's one of the. This was all secondary money. There was no new money raised for the business. Yeah. Didn't need it. So secondary, and the largest element of that was a JD holding, but they still maintain a position. Yeah, maybe. But look, with, they say it's moving into the US. It's got great Middle East. It's selling down in, you know, through Asia. It's selling in the UK. It's really built this really interesting global network of distributors. And I think that's what is slightly different. Often UK markets, UK stocks come to market with an ambition to sell abroad and develop new markets. This company's already started to do that. I think that's what's different about it, is it's got this platform already in place. It's already selling, distributing over in other markets and getting, you know, getting good growth. I think that to us was hugely reassuring from that perspective.
Good. Okay, well, let's move to technology. Start with industrial. Well, we've got Gooch and Housego. They're basically a sort of a high-powered laser producer for all kinds of, and sort of like, you know, photonics, for all kinds of applications, aerospace and defense, medical, industrial, and semiconductors. And I think out of them, the aerospace and defense is doing really well, that sector. I think that actually, I saw a picture on their website, and they've built this laser, high-powered, on a US Navy ship that knocks out aerial drones. So it must have some pretty shooting capacity there. I think on the medical side, they do sort of like laser treatment for people, maybe cosmetics. And then on the semis, they do some of the lasers, I think, for the lithography machines that although, you know, the big sort of semi-cap companies supply. But the shares, even though they've got really high IPR and IPR rich company, haven't done particularly well. How are you sort of viewing it going forward? Because to an idiot like me, it looks as though it's a fallen angel and should be able to do well once the tide turns.
You're not an idiot, Paul, at all. And it is a fallen angel. This is a high quality, if you say, optics photonics business, load of IP, load of great engineers doing really exciting niche things across aerospace, defense, life sciences, leading edge tech. Niche product suite, you know, high quality. Charlie Pepiat, the chief executive, 2 years ago, with a trying to refocus a business. It's a quality business, great, you know, great tech, but arguably too engineering led historically, not commercial enough. So Charlie was coming in to try to streamline the group, streamline the offer, focus on the growing aspects of the business and driving that forward. Now, he's had a few headwinds, obviously. We've seen destocking across industrial, the lasers and semiconductors, which has been a headwind. Defense, yes, credible, great product suite, but that part of the business is still loss-making despite good levels of growth. So there are a few things that have challenged the business in the short term, and meant it hasn't really got flying speed yet, pardon the pun on this, but you know, it's a quality niche business with great tech. It's trading 11 times price to earnings, 6 times EV, you know, where, and we sit here today fully expecting the business to start to see some of these headwinds turn into stable markets, if not tailwinds. Defense hopefully become profitable in the near term, and those earnings start to recover quite materially. So you've got 11 times, so trough earnings, trough multiple, far too cheap for what's here right now, yielding 3%. I think this business has, again, got great potential. And if someone doesn't, if we don't see the public markets recognize that and the business deliver, I'm afraid this might end up in someone else's hands in due course. But you're right. I think it's got real opportunity here. And you know, hopefully when the destocking ends and the market starts to stabilize and normalize, we'll start to see if some of the hard work that the management team have been putting in place start to come to fruition and start to be recognized. So it's a frustrating business from a share price perspective. Yeah. I think from an operational perspective, it's hugely exciting. From an engineering perspective, it's hugely exciting. So
I agree. It looks like a really sort of scientific rich business you know, one which is just incorrectly priced.
Yeah, you go to these capital markets days and they stand up and they've got so many things they talk about, so much exciting tech. Like, that's probably what's the negative about it, is there's so much they want to go for and they just got to focus. And I think they're trying to do that. But let's say with the market challenges and the headwinds they have short term, that's limiting that. But I think they're in good shape from a medium term perspective.
Yeah. Okay, got another question coming from AA. He's asking for just a view on Software Circle, which I don't think I've ever looked at before, but I think it's a software business in, is it document management, sort of 100 million market cap, something like that, maybe slightly less. But do you own that one at all, Chris?
No one I know, I'm afraid, Paul.
No.
Unless it's changed its name, maybe, but I don't know, I'm afraid. Sorry.
Okay, now we got one from Steve Waters asking for Pinewood Technologies, which is, I think, the... It used to be, it was a spin out from Pendragon that has got all the sort of the neat software that helps car dealerships sell and market and handle all their inventory. And I think it's on a sort of like an expansion strategy out in the States as well as outside of its heartland of the UK with Pendragon.
Yeah. Pinewood is one we hold. We bought it ahead of the spin out. It's done fairly well for us. They had a capital markets event last week, the week before. Just prior to that, they won their first big sort of flagship client. I'm trying to find the name here as I'm talking to you, which was helpful. I think the business historically being under Pendragon, other car retailers were less inclined to use it because of the fact it was within a car retailing group. Having stepped out from that, that there is the scope for them to sell into other retail groups. We had a chat with Vertu and the very enigmatic chief exec there. We talked about this product and he was very positive on the tech. Yeah. So the tech is good. They won the deal with Marshall Motors recently, a 5-year contract there, which drove some upgrades, which was great. And you say that they are moving into the States as well. So there's lots of potential exciting growth here. The tech is great. The numbers, it looks a little bit pricey on the short-term multiples. 32 times to December 25 for the price to earnings multiple. But I think those numbers are wrong. I think ultimately we'll see some good growth come through from this. And I think the rating will, or the EPS will catch up with the rating. I think because of the quality of the product here and what they're doing, they're just, this was one that quite excites me. I'm happy to run it, happy to hold on to it and see what they can do.
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's switch sectors. One which has had a few trials and tribulations is Next 15 Communications in sort of like digital marketing, etc. It helps big corporates sort of engage with their end customers, communicate them, convert them into orders, and they also did some digital transformation. But unfortunately, one of its divisions, I think, lost a large contract just recently, about £80 million of turnover. Mm-hmm. And according to the Times, it was the customer was a Saudi, was sat in Saudi Arabia, who was building that big line, you know, that big sort of infrastructure product. But anyway, who knows? That's their speculation. But anyway, how are you seeing this one sort of going forward? Because it's obviously 80 million in turnover to drop out in 2025, 2026 is a bit of a sort of like a, you know, a shot to the proverbial.
Yeah. Next 15 is on one of our bigger positions. They have done a great job historically growing this business organically and through acquisition. It's a marketing services business, data-led marketing services, great client list, you know, your like seven in the US, you know, it has got real credibility and it is a quality business. Now, it had the large contract, it was a contract won by one of its subsidiaries, Mac49, which they think they bought about 5 years ago. The contract itself was with a sovereign wealth fund that was with a Middle East sovereign wealth fund. So the time of speculation is probably roughly right, Paul. What surprised the markets were that the contract, the large contract, the customer exercised a break clause unexpectedly. Up until that point, we'd expected the contract to be extended. So I think that's what slightly caught the market off guard. On top of that, there was the earnout for the owners of Mac49, which Next 15 will continue to have to pay despite the contract ending. So there was some concern around, some questions around the way the contract was structured there, which, you know, clearly not ideal, but this clearly was a one-off and this was unexpected. But look, even what we'd like to do with any of the companies that we analyze, we look at the earnings progress within the business. So the EPS, we track that against on a rolling compound rolling basis. And we track that against the ratings. And what you can see with Next 15, it's got this really nice trajectory of growth in its EPS. It then massively kicks up because of this contract win and continues to grow. And then the EPS, a forecast EPS, FY2, I'm talking about here, it comes down to the back of the contract loss. But if you drew a straight line from the growth the business was delivering to where the EPS is now, excluding that large lump up and down again, the business is still growing. The business is still delivering its EBIT for January 2026, as January year end. This is a £90 million EBIT business. This is a £390 million market cap right now. For 2026, it's due to deliver, sorry, the following year for 27, it's due to deliver EBIT of over 100 million. So this business right now, it's still got underlying growth. It's trading on 6x price to earnings, 5x EBITDA. Obviously, there are sellers out there because the shares continue to be friendless. And there were the questions around the contract, which is not ideal. But even so, this is trading at levels, this one's, let's say, 6x earnings. This should be a 12, 13, 14x earnings multiple business. It should be double the current share price when things stabilize. The intrinsic value of this group is double the current level, in my view. I think it's vastly oversold down here. So it's been a huge frustration, but excluding the contract, I think Tim Dyson and Peter at the FD done a great job, really, in driving this business and taking it to the level it's got to. The contract has been an issue. It's a lot of noise around it. But ultimately, ignoring that, the fundamental growth in this business remains, the opportunity remains, and at these levels, the shares of us are far, far, far too cheap.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's a lot of bad news already priced into that shares.
Yeah, and it continues to push down. It's obviously someone selling out there. That's not us.
But, is there any read across from S4 Capital, Sir Martin Sorrells, because they've had a lot of sort of blood on the streets with the digital marketing side of it. I'm just wondering whether there's any read across from there that people are worried that it will infect, obviously, Next 15.
I don't know S4 well enough, to be honest with you, but
okay.
Yeah, okay, I think S4's issues are S4 specific largely, and Next 15's issues are Next 15 specific largely. Sure. From our perspective.
Okay, good. Well, we're coming up to the end. If anybody wants to ask Chris any more questions, just please drop them in. I've got a tough one here, Chris, which I ask everybody now, because we're coming up to 2025. If you're looking over the next 12 months, 18 months, so a reasonably long-term position, what sort of like stock most excites you in your sort of like your octopus portfolios that you think actually somebody should put this onto the stock watch list? I know we've had quite a few good ones already.
Onto the what list? Onto the
onto the stock watch list, you know, for investors to sort of like to have a good list.
Why is there a stock? Look, one I was thinking, I saw that it dropped me a line before the meeting, and it's Moonpig actually. Which is one we've only been involved with in the last couple of months. We had the CEO Nicol and CFO Andrew in the office about 2 or 3 months ago. And it's one I think I've failed to really understand historically, but I think it's really
join the club.
This feels to me like a compounding opportunity. It's got leadership in a fragmented market. You know, the card market is going to grow, okay, modestly, but it's still going to grow. This is the largest operator within the UK market. It's got 70% of the online market. Online market share is expected to double from 2019 to 2027. They've got a good tech platform, a quality product offer, great margins, high levels of cash generation. They've recently announced a dividend, which is why I should put in before they announced the dividend, but that's why I went to one of our income funds. And they, you know, they're starting to do a share buyback. So it's three levels to grow this business, three levers, sorry. It's more customers, so more penetration in the UK. Quite bizarrely, it's only the Anglo-Saxon nations and the Dutch that like cards. So it's the UK, Ireland, Australia.
My wife loves them.
Well, it's UK, Ireland, Australia, US, obviously, and the Dutch. They've got the business in the Netherlands, but they're in Ireland, they're in the UK, they're in Australia, and they're starting to experiment in the States. But it's more customers within those markets, so more online, more cards per customer. Of the customers that they have, they use Moonpig on average 3.5 times per year to buy a card. Now, the average person in the UK buys 19 cards per annum, Paul. Now, you may say that's nonsense, Chris, but actually, if you total it up, your wife's birthday, Valentine's, kids' birthdays, Christmas, your Mother's Day, add it all up, 19 is it feels about right. So more cards...
If you'd have said 19 each month, then I'd say that would be the right number for my wife. That's for sure. Unfortunately, she's married to me, so she doesn't get anything. She just said, "Tell that down."
So the data from 3 to 19. So this, you know, increase the number of cards per customer, increase the order value. Right now, they have got gifting, which I think 17% attach rate. So they increase that. I think 60% of cards are bought with gifts. So there's scope to increase that. So there's, you know, more cards per customer, more customers, higher order value. You can start to see how there's a lot more the company can do here. Some 20 times earnings, dropping to 17 by April 26. As I say, it's got all these really nice characteristics about margin, cash generation. I think it's in really good shape. It's really got me excited. I bought a bit more yesterday, so that's why it was on my radar as a favorite stock in the short term. I think it's in really good shape.
That's a great one for the Christmas stocking. Just got a final cheeky one from Paul the parrot, actually. He's got a parrot icon. He's asking about just quick thoughts on Renew Holdings, which I think has just been a real thoroughbred horse for years and years. Does essential maintenance of things like, you know, rail and nuclear. I mean, it doesn't say you can't, you know, this is non-discretionary stuff. You can't exactly not do maintenance on nuclear facilities, that's for sure. So how are you just seeing that one going forward? Run the winners?
Done a great job, and we hold this. I think we're one of the largest shareholders in it. 850 million market cap. I think what's happening now is it's starting to get on the radar screens of some of the larger investors, overseas investors, which it wasn't historically. So that's great. Paul, the chief exec, and Sean, the FD, did a great job with this business growing organically and through selective acquisitions. Great recent performance. First half numbers, revenue's up about 17%. Most of that's organic, which is amazing. Operating margin 6%. I mean, that's significantly higher than your average contracting margin because of the fact they're on this these essential maintenance, essential engineering frameworks, critical maintenance, as you talked about, renewals, emergency works. If you know a tree falls over the West Coast main line, it's these guys out there to clear it, or you know, it's that sort of thing. So it's low risk profile. They're not on large capital heavy, low margin contracting. You know, that's not their bag at all. It's rail, it's nuclear, it's water, it's roads, it's flood alleviation. I'd say it's on these frameworks. So really well placed, good performance recently. Let's say they're continuing to do acquisitions. They recently bought Full Circle, which is a European-based business. It's a big first step for the group into offshore wind farms. It's, again, a heavily fragmented market. So again, really, you know, scope there to continue to grow and consolidate. It's not as cheap as it was. It's on 15 times. 10 times EV EBITDA, but given the positioning, given the growth potential, given the double-digit earnings growth that you know they've been delivering and likely to do so going forward, this feels really well set. Pays a 2% yield. It's got mid-single-digit free cash flow yield. There's loads to like about it. It's one of those businesses you know, you meet companies. We meet 800 companies a year, and some of them are challenged meetings, but this is a sort of meeting you can. It's a joy. They're in such good shape, and the guys are doing a great job. And yeah, it's always good to see them. And yeah, we're very very happy holders.
Great. Okay, well, that's a fantastic place to finish. Really appreciate your optimism and positivity there. You've certainly made my day, that's for sure. There, Chris. So thanks again for all your insights, and very much look forward in touching base again in about 6 months' time.
See you then. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand, and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, pay later, and all major cards, so you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.